Welcome to Agents of Smooch. To wrap up our first holiday season with you, we are celebrating 12 days of Love Actually. Love Actually came out in 2003 and can be called perhaps the juggernaut of modern Christmas classics. Love Actually comes to us from the mind of Richard Curtis, who has brought us many British rom-coms such as Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Bridget Jones' Diary, among others. And it stars, well, all of the British stars and some newcomers, and tells the story of intersecting love stories through new love, old love, heartbreak, friendship, and loss. And while it is beloved by many, it is not perfect, which gives us a lot of scope to discuss why this movie has captured our hearts or not, and what it says about modern love at Christmas. We decided to dole out our discussions for you, coupling by coupling, with our own ensemble of agents. So for the next 12 days, we will be skulking in the airport arrivals area to see if love actually is all around. I am Annette Weirstra, director of Smooch. For day one of our 12 days of Love Actually, our agents will be joining us to discuss general feelings about the movie. My Erp Chirp co-host is joining us for her very first Smooch mission. Hello, Agent Kirsten Gorick.
Hi, it's nice to be here. I feel like I'm surrounded by snow and it's feeling very Erp Chirpy, so I'm feeling right at home.
Yes, we are both still in Alberta all the time, and it is very snowy, as it always is at this time of year. And we are also joined by Agent Katie Burt, who is not in Alberta, but on the other side of the country. Hello, Katie.
Hello. I'm thinking about this movie as like the Avengers of love story Christmas movies, and I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. So thank you for that, Annette, and thank you for inviting me onto this podcast again.
Awesome. Maybe they will spin all of the couplings out into their own separate movies and make a whole new universe.
Too powerful.
Yeah. Hello, Agent Jean McDonald.
Hello, Director Weirstra. How are you?
I am good. I'm excited to have you on this whole series of Love Actually episodes.
Yes, I love this show. Many things that have, you know, maybe lessened it in my eyes in certain ways, I still cry.
And we also have Agent Sandra Wong with us. Hello, Sandra.
Hello, Annette, Director Weirstra.
I know, I'd like my formal title,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, getting so formal.
Hello, Agent Kathy Campbell. Welcome to day one of 12 Days of Love Actually.
Hello, Director Annette. I am here. I am ready to go.
Awesome. And we also have Agent Moises Chulian. Hello.
I suppose you've brought along your boyfriend or something.
Oh, I did. And finally, we have the agent who came up with this whole concept, and I haven't decided if I am grateful or not to you, Brian Hamilton.
You can be both. You've seen it from both sides now.
I have. I feel like it is a very great and fun idea. I hope all our listeners have fun with this.
Oh, they will, for sure.
Because we're having fun.
That's the important part. All the fun.
I would like to know, how does Love Actually fit into your holiday traditions? Is this a movie you watch every year?
It is for me. I often watch it. I have a lot of friends who are spread out throughout Alberta and throughout the country, and so it's often one that I will watch long distance with a couple of my girlfriends, which is always a lot of fun. There are parts of it that I absolutely love, and there are parts that over the years I have grown to hate with a vengeance. But it still has a very sort of nostalgic, lovely, warm feeling for me. I don't watch it outside of the Christmas time. I'm not one of those people who can get Christmas nuts all year round. But it's definitely still, I own the DVD, so it's definitely a part of my go-tos, for sure.
I definitely try to watch it every year, and I think I mostly succeed. And I love, which I think you were kind of saying as well, Kirsten, that your feelings on the movie have changed over the years. And I love seeing every year, you know, which of the storylines are my favorites, which aren't, how that's changing, if it's changing. So that's really cool, especially because I did see this, I think, pretty early on. I remember my sister had seen it at college and brought it home, and we all watched it together as a family when I was in high school, and had very different reactions as a family. So yeah, I've I've been watching this movie for a while, and it is a nice, it's a nice routine to go back to. I'm glad I've already seen it. It was weird watching it this early in the season because we're recording this at the beginning of November, mm-hmm. but it also made me kind of like relieved. I was like, okay, I've watched Love Actually this year, so now I know I've done it.
You can check that off your Christmas list.
Exactly.
Yeah. I watched it with my mom and my sister too, Katie, and it's funny because I actually looked up when the movie was made because I remember being moderately mortified at certain scenes, especially John and Judy's whole storyline. Mm-hmm. Watching it with my mom, I was 16 at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not something I think any of us expected. And of course, watching it again and thinking back to that and being like, oh man, that was awkward. But, you know, we got through it. It was fine. Mm-hmm. Totally scared.
I do tend to watch it every year. Watching it a little bit in advance for the magic of podcast publication, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for Christmas. Like,
I'm putting
tomorrow.
Up your tree.
And I'll be taking the next 10 days off. So, yeah, I usually do watch it. It does kind of depend because, as I said, it still makes me cry. So if I have something going on, and I can't be just crying, you know, for half a day, then I don't watch it.
I used to watch it every year. And then as time passed, because I own the DVD, so as time passed, I found that it didn't quite hit the mark for me mm-hmm. anymore. So I stopped watching it. I haven't, before watching it, actually earlier today for this lovely podcast, I had not watched it in, I don't know, at least 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Good. So we're having almost new, fresh-ish eyes on this.
So Love Actually came out when I was actually working at a movie theater. I can always tell you exactly what year. So it came out November of 2003, which was when I had almost just started working upstairs in the actual projector area. Mm. And so I remember constantly turning on the soundtrack. So the machines had the ability to pipe in the audio upstairs so you could check and make sure everything was working correctly. I would turn Love Actually on so I could hear it throughout the rest of the corridors because I just loved the music so much.
Mm-hmm.
I have very fond memories of this movie. I had not seen it in about 5 years or so, and I have less good feelings about the movie now that I watched it again. But not from a really horrible, terrible standpoint. I just think it could do better, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But this movie really feels like the director, Richard Curtis, comes in and is like, you know what? I had a dream about this. And this is the ideal, you know, scenario for every situation, which I'm sure we'll talk about when we go to Harry and Mia, but I am going to have fever dreams about all sorts of these relationships, and then let's throw in some bad ones too to make it interesting. But I have thoughts.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
This movie came into my life much later because one Christmas my mom was like, oh, you know, we should watch Love Actually, and we all watched it as a family. It was great, and now it's just an annual part of Christmas tradition for me and the people in my life. For me, the idea of because the movie starts 5 weeks out from Christmas, mm-hmm. and the idea of Christmas beginning that early in your holiday celebrations is just bonkers to me. But you know, the UK does not have Thanksgiving as a buffer, so for me Christmas really only starts a few weeks before Christmas. But whew, I would love to do a 5 week out Christmas begin celebration.
Mm-hmm. Canada doesn't have that buffer either, because our Thanksgiving is second week sometime in October. So usually it's either Halloween or Remembrance Day, which is our Veterans Day, on November 11th, and then all bets are off. Everything flips to Christmas. Yeah, we have a long Christmas lead here too. You could come here, Brian, and get your 5 weeks or more of Christmas.
Clearly, we have to wait for the porters to open.
Yeah, there's that pesky little border problem.
Yeah, let's send Billy Bob Thornton up north to establish better international relations.
Perfect.
Hey, y'all. Hey, I'm here to ruin diplomatic relations with my libido.
Could he do any worse? Debatable.
I was working in a campus movie theater at the time, and we would occasionally get advanced screenings of things, and sometimes we would get asked, in lieu of actually paying a local publicity rep, to run an advanced screening at the local art house movie theater, which has since been bulldozed and literally been replaced with a Whole Foods in Tallahassee, Florida. The lovely Miracle 5. And there was an advanced screening for Love Actually that we were given to run at this off-site location. And this is a sleepy little art house movie theater that was never terribly busy. But for this advanced screening of Love Actually, it was completely packed. And I still have the t-shirt that I got for doing this. T-shirts, great for paying undergrads instead of money.
Yes.
Who needs money, right? My expectation going in, I was like, Richard Curtis, I mean, could be worse. I don't know. We'll see how this goes. There were parts of it that struck me as really interesting looks into that man's psyche at the time. And there are parts of it. The bit with Sam, when we get to the actual pageant and we get to the Mariah Carey song, makes me cry every time. Every time, because there's something so simple and pure and real about that, which some could say stands in stark contrast to a lot of the other stuff in the movie.
I always watch it with Bridget Jones' Diary, which is my favorite Christmas movie. So I often do a double feature of the two movies, and I even saw it in the theater. And cool. I remember being like middling on it. I did not love it immediately, but I still like it. I was like kind of confused by it at first. And I was interested when I was looking at it. At the time, the British audiences took to it a lot more than the American audiences. And it was sort of like beloved immediately in Britain and middling in America. And then I remembered, right, there is a little tiny call out in the movie where you're all like, yeah, we call out the American president, which may not sit the same and could affect people's reception of the movie.
Could it also been the form? Like, I'm trying to think if that was one of the first sort of intersecting storyline huge undertakings that I can think of anyways. I can think of lots now, but at that time I think it was sort of a new way of telling stories.
Yeah, I think especially for like a relatively like mainstream film, like I think it had been done, like I think there was like a foreign film that had done it and had been really critically celebrated. And I don't know if like Crash had come out at this point, but even if it had, this is definitely not like, it, you know, it's a movie that wants to get a broad swath of people into the theaters. And isn't necessarily trying to be, like art house cinema. Although, you know, I think it actually has some really sophisticated elements too.
It is an interesting movie, you know, for what is like technically a romantic movie. It has a lot of heartbreak, and not the kind of heartbreak of the classical, like, oh, they didn't love me or whatever, but like really like, to me, very realistic bits. Harry and Karen, that's I can barely stand to watch those scenes, even though I love that part the most.
Wow, this movie is so 2003.
The Nokia phones.
Yeah.
It is a definitively, you know, pre-smartphone era movie, which for some people makes it quaint or weird or adds a layer of nostalgia and comfort because it's from after 9/11, as pointed out very pointedly in the opening monologue by Hugh Grant. But it is before a lot of things changed in a lot of people's lives. And especially watching it in the context of the year 2020, there's a lot of gathering in enclosed spaces that feels relatively alien at this point. And in ways where, you know, I miss things. And there are also things where I go, God, that is messy. Oh, God, why do people do office holiday parties? why? They're destined for bad things. They're known for, this is where bad things happen in the workplace. So why do people keep doing them?
I think, Annette, we've already talked about this in other forums, but the Lindy West essay about this film is so funny, though. I mean, even as someone who was like kind of fond of this film. I did find that essay hilarious.
Oh, and I like the movie, but also can see that it is highly flawed, and only more so as time passes, where you're just like, it's very its moment and of its time. And I think that's what I liked about that Lindy West article, which I will put in the show notes, because it's well worth reading. Because I think even though it sort of mocks the tropes and the sentiments in a lot of the movie, it still is like, I get why a lot of people like it, but come on, let's just look at it realistically.
There's a lot of, you know, contemplative stuff mixed in among a bunch of just weird stuff. I have to be reminded that's Andrew Lincoln, because I never watched The Walking Dead, and so I don't go, oh, wow, look, it's Andrew Lincoln. It's that guy from the insanely creepy section that is always going to be insanely creepy and weird, and endorse the notion that incels should just go for it, right? Incels should just go for it.
Honestly, I think that part is more creepy than Billy Mack's music video.
Look, Red Vine Daddy can do what Red Vine Daddy wants.
Yeah, it's true. But that's for a future episode.
True. I love that this movie is where people discovered Bill Nye. Mm-hmm.
This movie is one that I will watch with the commentary on, because I freaking love the commentary. And I love the fact that they had the actress that sang, they had to make her add some breath breaks because it was not believable that she could sing it as well as she did. And they were like, this is just not believable that this kid can sing it so perfectly. So let's just, you know, facilitate and fake some breath so that people will believe that she is a kid.
Oh my God.
That's so fascinating.
That actress we now know as Marceline the Vampire Queen from Adventure Time.
No! Stop! Are you serious?
Yep.
That
is funny. Does she sing? Because I feel like she should still be singing.
She sings in Adventure Time all the time.
Why did you eat my fry?
Awesome.
Yeah. That bit gets me every time. Emma Thompson, queen of screenwriting, queen of acting, queen of everything of my world. Queen of sketch comedy, people forget. Queen of everything. I mean, the woman can do everything. I watch her watching paint dry.
Yes.
It has some very seriously problematic elements, like a lot of them. And Jean, I also cry too. I do. Yeah. There are parts that just, I mean, yeah. I mean, Richard Curtis, I think he's a filmmaker of his time. I don't know that he would move me now, but some of the things do seem like so genuine, right? Really authentically moving. So I mean, I still cry even though it's like, oh, cringe. Oh, cringe.
I mean, he definitely changed my experience of being in the airport. Now just waiting for somebody, you know, to come through the exiting passenger area, I feel like I'm in a movie.
And it's both a rom-com and fits, like, hits a lot of the tropes, but it also doesn't. Like, not every pairing ends happily or in the way that you might think it should. It's like, oh, what is it saying to us about love? What do you think the message of the movie is? I kind of take it to be that love is complicated.
It is. I also think that there's so many different versions of love from the time that you're a child to when you grow old.
That's something that's missing. They don't have, like, that love that has sort of coming to the end due to, like, seniors. There's no...
That's true. I mean, there is a death of a spouse, but she's quite young.
Yeah.
I know, like, there's no spoilers, right? Like, the show has been out
we're
for
assuming
a few years.
That you've all seen this movie.
If you haven't,
go watch it. Then come back.
I think there was a scene that was filmed and cut, or a plot line that was filmed and cut about... It was a lesbian couple, and one of them was dying.
Aww.
Yeah, and I wonder, I don't know what their ages were. Like, one of them was a headmistress character, so I'm assuming she was at the school that a lot of the kids in the film go to. And then it was her partner. I imagine she wasn't, like, an older person. So.
I'm going to imagine it was Judi Dench.
Aww.
Yeah.
I know, there's so many good, like... yeah, I'm sure, I guess they cast it, actually. I should...
I have not heard this tidbit, and I'm very curious about it.
Yeah, and that's the first I've heard of it, too. It can't have been Judy. You'd never cut
No, you wouldn't cut Judy.
No.
I think it's important to to recognize that love is important. It's so cheesy and, mm-hmm. and terrible. But I wish what they had added into this was non-romantic love also. But, you know, we talked about this a little bit. It was in 2003. This idea of not having happy endings was not extremely popular. And so the idea that there were a couple stories in here that weren't happily ever after was pretty meaningful. I like that that started that sort of conversation. But I think if they had made this, like, now having some relationships that were not romantic would, and that it's okay to love your friends, and make that more of a part of the story would have been important.
And it's okay to love Joni Mitchell, because that is where Emma Thompson's character ultimately ends up, is like, if, you know, you love, a love of Joni Mitchell is lifelong. My favorite relationship in the entire movie is Liam Neeson and his son. It's so wholesome and good and sweet, and it's not romantic. And I think, you know, 2003 was probably not far removed enough from, say, anything boombox outside the window, ew, creepy kind of thing, where this movie is still pretty creepy in a bunch of ways. See also, you know, incel with the SNL cue cards confessing his love to, to the person.
A married woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not great. But seeing Liam Neeson and his son having such a good, wholesome, supportive relationship in a way that you really don't see a father and son on camera like that, you know, reenacting the Titanic.
Right. Well, and especially a stepfather and son, because he was married to his mom, but wasn't his direct son.
Oh, right. I forget that every time I watch this movie.
So, like, that's even more, like, impactful, in my opinion, that he took this father figureness and made it even more meaningful.
Exactly. And the other thing about that relationship with Liam Neeson and his son, the fact that this kid is really the only person in the movie who is young enough and cute enough to pull off the creepy rom-com ending to his story, like chasing after someone in an airport. I always think it's creepy when Colin Firth goes in and like demands marriage or whatever from the whole village.
Gosh,
it was very weird. But seeing the kid do it is extraordinarily cute, because you know what? He's 9 and it's fine.
I think one of the themes is about bravery, that love requires bravery. So there are a lot of different ways. So I know our three couples, that they all explore that in different ways.
I agree with that. Being brave is a key component. Also, that whether you're brave or not, you may still get your heart broken.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, the Juliet, Peter, and Mark, least interesting, also for me, most problematic, the whole like stalker vibe and, you know, just the sheer entitlement and self-centeredness and juvenile nature of that character of Mark is just, I'm like, I'm good. Just, that's fine.
Yeah, there are parts of the movie that will always be a comfort. There will be parts of the movie that are very much of their time, and that's not a defense of them. And I mean, it was problematic when it came out, and I am glad that a bunch of the hoity-toity kind of reviews that were out when it came out just dismissed it as, you know, romantic garbage or whatever. As many issues as I have with what Richard Curtis put into his script, there's a lot to love and a lot to appreciate. If you were there at this time, if you lived through this time in history, when the world was a different kind of uncertain than it is now.
I will say, I think on the podcast where we discussed Crocodile Dundee, we had a movie that was much beloved for a while, but then we all stopped watching it. Nobody watched it, you know, like, and then rewatching it in 2020 was definitely like, okay. And I don't feel quite that bad.
Crocodile Dundee, I don't even think we can call it a problematic fave anymore. It's just problematic.
It's just problematic. Yeah. There's still, we can still append fave to this one, I think. Problematic fave. Yeah.
The lovely thing about knowing a movie as well as I do this one is I can put all 17 hours of it on in the background and selectively pay attention to what I want to and then ignore the rest.
I could fast forward through those sections and be totally fine.
Kathy, I think somebody needs to commission a no Colin edit for all of us.
Yes, please.
Remove him from the movie.
Just completely remove him.
And that's the thing about anthology movies like this, right? Well, not even anthology movie, but it's one of those ensemble casts where everyone is so separated out and you like check in with all of your favorite characters over the course of 2.5 freaking hours. Because guess what I learned today? This movie's 2.5 freaking hours. Mm-hmm. And the idea of, you know, all of these things, throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what sticks for a very, very, very long movie means that, of course, you're going to have favorite bits and least favorite bits, and different bits are going to age in different ways. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that doesn't age well, but I think it's interesting to see which ones age in, like, age poorly in different ways because they are all so separated out from each other.
Yes.
And it means you can just skip over the ones you don't like.
Mm-hmm. This will wrap up our first day of our 12 Days of Love, actually, but be ready because we are going to come back at you tomorrow with another story. So stay safe, agents. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of The Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon.